Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast. My goodness, do we have a show for you tonight, because we have set up the randomizer.
No, we didn't do that.
Okay, so we've got this other topic. No, we didn't. We're not going to do that either.
God.
I could do this. We should start from the top.
No, it's time to preview bowl game.
Bowl game.
We don't go backwards. We only go forwards, okay?
It's time to preview the NFL draft.
We watch enough SEC East football. We will move forward, goddammit.
The 2013 season promises to be a...
Infinity War spoilers.
No, we already did that, too. No. I am honestly surprised neither one of you told me that, like, a pole mower was a big part of the plot, but
I mean,
some things are too sacred to give
starting
away.
Starting up an outboard engine, but we're not here to talk about that fantasy series. We're here to talk about Star Trek.
Yeah, because what we actually did for this one is we asked you, the readers, for college football questions you are too embarrassed to ask, and some of you are very, very sincere, and some of you tweeted from, I don't know, a conversation you were having with one of the hosts prior to the show.
What?
Now go ahead.
No, this was your idea to try and make me like Star Trek.
I didn't try to make you like Star Trek.
It won't work.
No, you can't make people like
Star Trek. How is Jane Costin explaining to me
why you like Star Trek is just as bad.
I don't understand. You're friends with Jane Costin and John Boyes, and neither one of them has gotten you to like Star Trek yet, Holly?
I can actually make it worse. I've only seen the JJ Star Treks. I like Star Trek.
Okay.
They get really mad when you say that.
Okay.
Almost as mad as when I say, okay, so Star Trek is like Star Wars, but with science instead of magic.
Yeah.
It's like Star Wars without the sex.
What if instead of guns and swords, everyone had a very nicely steamed suit?
You know what? Star Trek to me is like Mississippi State football. Mm-hmm. No, it's like Ole Miss football. It's not really the football that bothers me. It's the fans.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
It's not the football itself that's a turnoff. It's all the trappings and the hangers-on that come with it.
You're going to get hop-ons.
I was going to make an It's a Trap joke, but I'm above that, like the stars.
Yeah, that's from Lord of the Rings anyway. That's the wrong series.
I also
have a concussion, so this is going great.
What is the, like, I've never seen any Star Treks, which is, like, awkward for me because for the first, you know, 20 years of my life, every time I said my name, someone would say, oh, Captain Kirk, and I'd say, oh, yeah.
Oh, God, that would suck.
That's the only thing I know about it. So, like, what is the case for Star Trek? Is that what we're doing here?
I already had to I don't want to hear this again.
That's why we're doing it.
I will say this.
It's time for Holly to go in the silence zone.
I rescind my apology for appearing on tonight's podcast.
You didn't mean it in the first place.
No, I did not. I don't actually think I know what sorry is. Like, I don't think I've ever experienced that feeling.
We can't get into that on this show. I'm sorry. We'll do a very special episode, but not today.
This robot learns to love, but not how to forget.
Hey,
there's a robot on Star Trek called Data.
Who learns to love?
No, there's not.
Yeah, no, there's a robot. Listen, we can tell her things that she doesn't know, and she'll think we're making these stupid things up.
He's played by, you know, the scientist in Independence Day with the long scraggly hair who gets his neck wrapped around by the alien, and it's release me.
Yeah, yeah.
He was one
of the lone gunmen.
Brent Spiner.
He plays an android robot thing on Star Trek.
Named Data, and he's most noted for this. He has a fully functional penis. That's
awesome.
Yeah, no, that's...
But here's the catch. None of the other characters do.
So does everyone fuck the robot, or does no one fuck the robot?
It's like Black Mirror. What if the robot was the only one who had sex?
Jesus Christ.
On some level, I admire somebody as big and slow as you finding the fastest and most expedient way to make this so much worse.
What if the microphone was the only thing not listening? Uh-huh.
I actually would like to point out that I am in position to kick Spencer real hard.
Black Mirror, episode 8. What if the camera?
Oh my god, I'm kicking him, and he's not even responding.
What if the camera was? What if the camera was? Do you have
your
mind?
What if every time Spencer did that voice, he got kicked?
I kicked him in. No, I kicked him right in the kneecap with shoes on, and he didn't even blink.
I am naming this character Thicky Gervais, and we're moving on.
More like Sticky Gervais.
See, the irony is that it's called a credit card it's just made up.
Well, are you going to do this?
It's just made up.
We'll end the show now. We're only like 5 minutes in.
Do you know how much richer you would be if you were this persona online instead of your actual personality?
No. Here's an idea. Here's an idea.
Oh, my God.
You're like a bug zapper for mediocre whites.
Okay, well, we're not going to talk about Star Trek anymore. You ruined it. We can't do it. We can't talk about Star Trek.
We can't, because this is a college football
podcast. This is a lean, mean sports podcast for sports fans.
It's time to get back to business.
Wait, are we recording?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Shit. All right.
That's how I feel
the same way.
Almost all the time. All right, Spencer, are you alive?
I'm good. I'm in there.
Do you promise?
I actually feel bad about how hard I kicked you, but you didn't do anything.
Do you promise not to do that voice?
You know,
I will equalize you. We're not even blood.
I'm gonna give you. I promise this. I'm gonna time it. I'm gonna give you a good 15-minute break from it. Okay.
And you know that if Ryan were making this promise, he would jump in with Love Shack as Ricky Gervais in 35 seconds.
Yes, but like everybody
it's
knows
like,
I'm
it's basically shit. Like fat. It's either Ricky Gervais or it's fat Tom York, right? Like that's.
Oh. Tom Yorkshire pudding.
Welcome that's to Michael Caine's buffet.
Oh, thank God we're all British. This is great. Jason, I want to hear Jason do a British accent.
I just want to see fat Tom York dancing. The spasm dance.
Wait, Jason, do a British accent.
Oh, shit.
No, there's no. Yeah, I don't even think
I
want
to hear what that sounds like.
I think he's too southern. I think it's not within
him. No, I want Kennesaw Cockney.
You know how there are certain like consonants that you can't pronounce unless you learn them at a very young age? I think that's Jason in foreign accents.
All right.
Yeah, I don't got the right parts in my mouth to do that.
No.
Yeah. You know, that would be my debut album, Pablo Honeybun.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. We're starting with this college football question.
Big ass spider on the wall.
College football question you're too embarrassed to ask. From Matt at Flying Lamprey. Why are Michigan men like that?
Oh, man. Spencer, as the ranking Michigan man here, why don't you handle this?
As the man with the most actual Michigan in my bloodstream, right? Both as a result of multiple Michigan tattoos and, I don't know, considerable consumption of Bell's products
over the years. And that incident with Dr. Brundle and Chad Henney.
Yeah, he's half Henney, half Brundle. Brundle Henney. So I think this is why Michigan men are like this. Okay. They, and I'm by Michigan men, I mean Michigan men and women. It's an equal opportunity.
You know that
thing.
By assessing them, you're just giving them an opening to jump in and say, this is actually why we're like this.
It's a very deep joke. There are levels, and they can jump in wherever they like. They'll just never have the penthouse. Okay. Because that's where we're starting. So you have to look at it this way. It is a public institution, right? And it's a very good public institution. So they're always going to be a little insecure, and they're going to be a little too smart for their own good, i.e. probably the part of the brain that controls massive social function, right? You're going to cut into that a little bit. There's going to be an easement, right? Like the brain has little easements it places on things, right? We allow this all the time for geniuses, right? Maybe rightfully or wrongly. We go, oh, well, you know, they're brilliant. How can you expect them to wear pants, right? Or not arson. Arson's a verb. Shut up.
I'll stop arsoning if you put your pants back on.
Right.
Oh, so we've got a Gift of the Magi situation. That's cute.
Actually, the Gift of the Magi was... Yeah. That's... Oh, and that's Christ. What happens when
well,
you
speaking,
say...
Well, speaking of England, isn't arsing, like, wouldn't that mean not wearing pants?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow, that's deep, dude.
Wow.
That's deep.
You were the most British amongst us the whole time.
See?
Yeah. So that's my understanding of why that, plus I guess a general sort of Midwestern culture of, if you're from the Midwest and you have a really good dark sense of humor, right? You go to Chicago. Like, Chicago has a very mean sense of humor, right? Like, when you talk about, like, the classic SNL duality, there are half the writers from Chicago, half the writers from New York, and those the ones who went to New York were these Ivy League guys who were like, sharks with lasers, and I thought that was funny, and everyone from Chicago was like, ha ha, dead body, right? Like, that's a Chicago thing. If you're funny and you're at Michigan, I don't know, you make, like, really deep jokes about the Potsdam Conference. That's been my experience online.
The teapot dome scandal.
Right. There's a lot of like people who go, you know, I thought the Onion's like this dumb century was really funny, but there were some inaccuracies in the first 30 pages. That goes way deeper into the question than you want. There's also this. It's a very traditional place in terms of the football culture. And I always think like football culture leads. Football culture is indicative of a lot of what the school is and how those people sort of generally coalesce if there are common threads. And Michigan's the kind of place where they're like, I've been in row 8, seat 32 for 900 years. Why would I change anything? So I think that bleeds over a little bit into it as well, which has made the last decade particularly traumatic for them. Sorry about that, Michigan. It's all good now.
Oh, you're fine. Shut up.
You're fine.
Put some dirt on it. Not like actual dirt.
Yeah.
You know, like literary dirt. Hemingway.
By the way.
Put some Hemingway.
By the way.
On it.
Chew up some pages of Grapes of Wrath.
Tropic of Cancer.
Rub that in like a poultice.
Grind up some Tropic of Cancer and put it on that.
By the way, seriously lovely people who do get the joke, even if they're going to correct you on it. They will correct you on it because that is their reflex. But they're in on the joke. Mostly. Sometimes.
Several of them.
Great. Next.
I have an important one from Matt Ferenchik, Matt F15. Hopefully I got that last name. What is Conference USA? This is simple. Conference USA is a grease trap. It is the it's the part of FBS where we put teams that should be in FCS, but like you can't just force a team to be in FCS. I mean, and even that is being even that's not quite generous enough, because if we're keeping it real, it's probably like 40 or 50 teams that should be in FCS. But Conference USA is sort of the place for the ones that don't have any kind of a collective identity to them. Like the MAC is like the Midwestern teams that don't matter. The Mountain West is the West Coast teams that don't matter. Conference USA, it's just teams from all over that don't matter. And I know if you're listening, if you're a podcast ain't played nobody person, and you hear me saying this, you know this is just sacrilegious, but Conference USA, it's just really there. It is there.
Yeah.
You know what Conference USA is? It's a lot like the clearing warehouse for the rest of college football, right? Like if stuff has just gone so far down the ladder that you're not selling it at like Big Lots, then you're in Conference USA, which is fine. There's some great deals down there. Amazing deals.
Is it a yard sale?
Yeah, I think that's better. It's the
yeah, but it's a yard sale where it's like unclear what's prompting it.
Estate sale.
It's like the contents of a yard sale fell into a gulch.
An estate sale where nobody died.
But like a friendly gulch.
We're just sad. We just feel dead.
I want to get into a general question that I have like very definite answers for, which is this. It's from at Magnet Carta. So how much college football history should I know? Like, am I supposed to know how many titles Alabama has? The answer to the second part of the question comes first. Are you supposed to know how many titles Alabama has? The number of titles Alabama has, and I will give you the honest answer from years of engaging with both Alabama, Auburn, and other associated foes.
Texas A&M.
Texas A&M and assorted frenemies of the Crimson Tide around the internet. The answer is however many the person you are talking to thinks Alabama has is the answer. Just, it costs you nothing. Just say, yeah. That's not an answer a Michigan man could ever accept.
It's like Caitlin was telling Ryan a while back. It costs you nothing to be quiet.
Nothing. If they roll up and they say, hey, man, Alabama's got 34 titles. You got 34? Be like, no, man, I don't. It's crazy. Alabama's got 34. Do you know who's right? Probably you. You know who's wrong? The guy who said 34. You know who's never, ever going to understand the concept of being wrong? The guy who thinks Alabama has 34 titles.
Yeah, like, think of a mentally disturbed person walked up to you in a bus station and was like, hey, man, I got 12 swords. And you saw that they only had 10. You wouldn't really quibble.
You might. You'd be an idiot for quibbling. You'd be an idiot.
Actually, one of those is a scimitar.
Because you know what it costs you to skate effort-free through the diseased, frozen rink of this man's mind and on to saner ground by moving past that point in the argument? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. That's how many titles they have.
In one of those swords, Alabama ranked number 20 in the AP poll and claimed the sword 40 years later.
That's actually just a palm frond you've got there. It's a sword.
Yeah, another one of these swords. Notre Dame beat the sword in a bowl game.
That's not a recent sword. It's old.
Yeah, that sword doesn't count.
That's true. It was a platinum sword of the highest grade and quality.
Yeah, for those Bamas like the 9-year-old kid who's like, no, I was wearing my Infinity
shoes. It was a beam team sword.
You can't catch me because I had 900,000 lives plus Infinity.
The Lego, the Lego movie, like Bama football. If you
think about it.
Now, Magna Carta, as for how much history you should know about college football anyway, the easy answer is you don't have to know anything. You don't. Sometimes it's better if you don't.
I disagree. Right? I disagree.
Okay. No. I have a flexible answer.
Okay.
We'll hear your rebuttal in the moment.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I don't think you have to know a lot, really, to appreciate what you're looking at. You don't, right? Like, all you really have to sort of know is what the team colors are, what's happening. Maybe if there are a couple of jokes that are in jokes, you get those explained. That happens, right? Occasionally, Lane Kiffin will do something, which is like, I don't know, pretty good, like maybe 7 year back callback with a play call or something. That's what we're here for.
But a lot of these are zero entry pool jokes, and a lot of it happens osmotically.
Right.
But if you're the type that likes to do homework, I would suggest this. Learn, if you really want to study up on your hobby, and I don't understand you weird people who want to crack books for something that's supposed to be fun and stupid, but I would suggest learning in depth the current era that you are in and the entirety of the immediate previous era. In this case, I feel like a good entry point would be going back to the start of the BCS era. So crack that encyclopedia open at like 97, 98 and work your way forward from there. And this way it's rolling, you know, whenever this current system gets replaced by whatever's next, you know, you can just kind of shuffle the BCS off into the past.
Classic Tennessee answer. Just start off.
Let me finish the exact sentence I was in with. You can just shuffle that era along with Tennessee's last ever national title.
I would also state this, like, if you want to go earlier, my answer is this. When somebody says, you know, because like, okay, the NBA playoffs are on right now, right? And my favorite part of the NBA, period, online, is their Twitter community, because no matter who manages to play and no matter how good a player might be on the floor, there is somebody who thinks they are absolute trash. There are people out there who really do think, they're like, Clyde Drexler could wax LeBron. Clyde Drexler is incredible.
Vin Baker, better than LeBron.
Yeah, Vin Baker, better than LeBron. Ricky Davis, bring it.
Tree Rollins, better than LeBron.
Right.
Yeah, NBA Twitter got me into the NBA more effectively than did years of working at ESPN and Sports Illustrated.
Right. And my favorite thing that they will do sometimes is when old heads will begin to say, yeah, and I don't know, man, Oscar Robertson and these guys in the 60s, they were incredible. Somebody begins absolutely slandering Bob Cousy. Bob Cousy, right? The point guard with the fancy moves for the Boston Celtics. If you look at Bob Cousy looks like you trying to like dribble between your legs. Like the level of athleticism is so low.
In the 80s, like nobody, they were more athletic, but nobody like looked like they were working out. They all looked like, you're a young golfer. Cool.
You look like a light smoker. Good job.
You eat a lot of you eat a lot of grilled chicken sandwiches at Wendy's, huh? Good for you.
You eat at Delights. There's a callback. It's the healthy fast food. Herschel Walker was an investor. That's history. It's college football history.
You're a tall arcade manager.
Yeah.
I think my two pieces of advice here would be, one, assume everything, every stupid thing that happens, it's happened before, and it was even dumber one of the eight times it's happened mm-hmm. before, because the sport is almost 150 years old. The second would be, I would say, just go for the past decade for now. Just bite off the past decade. Like, so much shit has happened in just the past decade. I'd say start there. Start around the year 2007. Greatest season in the history of the sport, so start there.
Oh, that's mm-hmm. a good idea.
That's a good one.
I'm going to offer a gloss sort of on Holly and Jason's, and it's not like, don't go, I don't think you should go back and try to, like, relearn the past. I do think you should pick out the programs that you are interested in or the ones that you intersect with most or the ones that you dislike most, and you should find the weak points. Like, if you are a new Pac-12 fan, and you're frustrated because Washington is really good and Washington's recruiting really well and they have a good coach, you should know that they hired Ty Willingham after he failed at Notre Dame and he tried even less hard. Somehow, you should know that. You should go find all these good nuggets, these jugulars, and you should gather them up like precious throwing stones.
Yeah, this is a good overlay strategy. The thing that I like about my plan is that it's adaptable to the future. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as soon as the next era, you know, whenever the next era takes its place, then, well, you'll need like the little fledgling playoff era plus whatever comes next. Like, keep up with what came immediately before you and you'll have most of the jokes. Alternatively, base it on social media platform and only confine yourself to the greatest like Twitter moments. And you can be conversant from there.
Yeah. Last note, I don't think you should care about anything prior to 1968 or 1969.
God, no.
No, I don't. And, I have like two real...
In life or in football.
I have two real critical reasons for that. Like actual reasons when somebody goes, well, I don't know, Red Grange, the greatest running back. Trash. Absolute garbage if you put him on the field today. You know why? He didn't lift weights.
The galloping ghost.
Nobody lifted weights before 1969. Nobody. Everybody got faster and everybody got 20 to 30% bigger. And that's before the great corn syrup bomb of the 70s hit and people started actually like weighing over 300 pounds on the line, right? Like that didn't really creep into college football until like the 80s and like early 90s. You didn't have 300 pounders on the line. It's not the same game. And it's not even the same like speeds. People got faster. Additionally, a lot of those teams pre-68, they're only using half the population available, especially in like the SEC, certain parts of the ACC and the Big 12, because they're segregated. So that's off the rails too. You really shouldn't care about it. When anyone makes any kind of like absolute qualitative, like, oh, Doc Blanchard and Glenn Davis of Army, the best 1-2 running back, garbage, absolute fucking trash. And I just mean that physically. You put them next to anyone, they would be decimated on a like all things equal field, all right? Because they didn't even eat the same amount of calories. They didn't lift weights. They're not the same species of human on the football field. They're just not.
Yeah, it's like Alexander the Great. It's like, weren't most of the people you were conquering like constantly having diarrhea? Are we that impressed?
It's basically like the least poopy army.
All right.
Congratulations.
So, a children's history of the world.
So here's where you start. This I'm taking all of this, and this is your starting point. President Nixon declaring Texas national champions instead of Penn State in 1969. That's your starting point. Everything before that, fuck it. That's your entry into stupid and hate-filled and... in the case of Joe Paterno, talked a lot of shit about scandals and cover-ups related to Watergate. Gladly, that never bit him in the ass. Let's move on to the next topic.
Oh, sure. here's a quick one from Chuck Nasty 757. If the Big Ten and SEC declared actual war on each other, sidebar, they did. We saw how that. Oh, wait, there's more. Sorry. There's more to the question. Sorry. Only using the players on each team. Oh, I get it now. who would win? Well, the Big Ten has more teams, so the manpower, and they have a much broader geography.
But the SEC, see, you know, Big Ten fans hate it when SEC fans cheer for each other during bowl games, even though that doesn't happen as much as I think people want to, or when some SEC school starts the SEC chant. And what they don't realize is that that's building cohesion for potential military purposes. The minute you put a Michigan State unit next to an Indiana unit, oh my God, they're just going to fight with each other. There's no, the Big Ten's going to crumble. And then Rutgers comes rolling in with its pants accidentally on backwards, and it left its gun at home, and instead it brought a big sandwich full of French fries. Jesus Christ.
Who gave Rutgers a gun?
Who gave Rutgers a sandwich? They don't deserve that much.
I think Rutgers is like medic or something. You can't even trust them with that. They'd be like,
who gave Rutgers a syringe?
They'd be like, oh, we got
it. Hey, Johnson & Johnson is right there. You know damn well who gave Rutgers a syringe.
Opens up the field.
Rutgers, how did you give him five legs?
Rutgers, we cured polio. What are you doing?
No one at Rutgers is like, since they invented football in 1867, no one at Rutgers has actually like, you know, gone further in medicine than
that
either,
right? Wait,
did
you say they invented football or polio?
Both.
Yes.
They invented both. Little known fact about Rutgers.
Same day.
Yeah. By the way, I love the Big Ten's motto. Like when they're like, SEC fans, stop just like glomming on the success of others. I'm like, the Big Ten, die alone. Die alone. No friends.
My favorite thing about all that shit is everybody's exactly the same. That's the big secret. All college football fans are the same. Like all this pick and nuance stuff, you know, it's fun. It's fun. And there's some truth to it, but 90% of college football fans are exactly the same. Yes, I'm talking to you, Big Ten fan.
Also,
you do this shit during bowl season too.
The minute war is declared, Maryland is like, hey, for $500, we'll switch sides.
They're the Italy of college football.
Yeah, for being a bunch of AAU affiliated universities, they haven't quite figured out yet that all of them banding together to cheer against SEC teams in bowl season is just the same as cheering for each other.
Yeah.
We're not so different.
Fucking standardized test, Brock.
Jesus.
UVA is just going to go Switzerland, like in the event of the ACC.
I mean, is anybody even going to know they're there?
You may hide your gold here. No questions asked.
They're like one of those countries that you're not really sure in World War II where they were at, like Uruguay.
I like the Mountaineers, West Virginia, just bombing in here to try to take over everything. Like, you're not even on either.
Bronco Mendenhall doesn't believe in the extradition treaty
we
either.
We hate all y'all. All right, let's do this one. Why do refs in different conferences call games differently? Did they adapt to style of play, or did play style adapt to refs? This is from Jordan at JMB 22392. I don't actually think this is a thing. I think we've all convinced ourselves this is a thing, but you can go on Twitter on any college football Saturday, patent pending John Boyce, and you can see everybody complaining about insert conference here refs. And nobody really gets as specific as to like, oh, these refs don't call anything, or these refs call everything. These refs call too much passer, too much, like, the complaints are all the same. They don't know what targeting is. They don't know what holding is. How could you call a flag there? You gotta throw a flag there. It's exactly the same. I don't think there's any meaningful difference across conferences in how the refs actually call the games.
So, just from looking online, weirdly, I feel like the only conferences that, while they will certainly scream about officiating in a game, do not disparage their conference refs as a whole. I feel like you hear a lot more about ACC refs, Big 12 refs, and Pac-12 refs than either SEC or Big 10 refs. P.S. The spot was good.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I mean, I feel like SEC refs, there's some complaining too, but Big 10 refs, I mean, they seem pretty satisfied. I mean, there's
like nine plays per game,
so how bad could it be?
Yeah, you'll see individual game complaints like during, but what I'm saying is the complaints about the officiating from the SEC and the Big Ten seem to me to be largely game specific, whereas in the ACC, Big 12, and especially Pac-12, it's a pandemic.
Right. You don't see like hashtag Big Ten refs.
And the SEC and the Big 12 right. are all the theories seem to be formed around, like, they're protecting the big boys. The SEC is protecting Bama. The Big 12 is protecting Texas. The Pac-12, it is kind of just like we all think they're terrible all the time.
Protecting Oregon
Honestly,
State?
Honestly, at this point, the Big 12 could use, Texas could use the protection. I'm fine with Big 12 refs doing whatever they want to nurture those little baby Longhorns out of the pen.
A few years ago, I actually broke this down, looked up the penalties per conference per game. Number one is the Sun Belt. Sun Belt is extremely legalistic. Just you better watch your ass in the Sun Belt. Topping the Power Five was the Big 12. Everyone out there with Big 12 ref conspiracies? Yes, they were, and they were big. The Pac-12 was pretty much tied. ACC and SEC were pretty far down there, along with the MAC and Mountain West. The Big Ten was last with 3 fewer penalties per game than the flag mad Sun Belt, and of course Conference USA exactly in the middle because it can never pick a side.
So wait, do we posit from here that the Big 12 is still trying to protect Texas and they're just bad at it?
There is a possibility of that. I maintain, by the way, the thing the Pac-12 is protecting is Amun-Ra, the god that we worship, along with the avatar of the moon goddess, Amun-Re, passing through the door, invisible to everybody, but we in the stripes. Like, yeah, like I don't believe every myth ref. Or every ref myth, right? Like, I think the SEC lets them play for the most part. They're terrified. And, they're terrified of making a call in a stadium and getting killed. I think that's absolutely true.
Sure.
Refs do not want to get death threats, and they get death threats. It sucks. It's stupid. But it actually happens. So I think they want to make calls as judiciously as possible. I do think Big Ten refs are kind of constitutionalists. They're right. We will not intervene. Advantage Michigan State. Like, if they could.
The free market will decide.
Yeah, free. Weird. The Orphans gave up 48 points again. Plutocrat, you.
The Big Ten ref is like the Watcher in the Marvel Universe.
Right. Help me. I cannot. Yeah. Pac-12, although, and I don't believe, I actually do believe, like, if you want to go, what do I actually believe about, like, ref myths and conspiracy theories? I actually do believe Big 12 refs give Texas more calls.
Oh,
I don't
sure.
think it's. Yeah. I think that just happens.
I mean, there's video evidence. Like, there's stuff that's really, really hard to refute.
Yeah, and I think on the whole, actually, like,
unlike Texas football, hard to refute.
Wow,
yeah. But I actually do think Pac-12 refs are completely like. I think they're undertrained. I think they're too decentralized. And I don't think they have a great budget. And I think that they pull from, I think it's a distance thing. Like, those guys come up from high schools and then they work in a college system where they're traveling long distances. They're real tired. When they get to the game, they're completely overwhelmed by what they're looking at. They're generally like, they have the same amount of experience. Like, if you look, they're not substantially more or less experienced than anyone else. They just make weirder calls all the damn time.
It's all a presentation thing. I think Pac-12 refs probably do an overall fine job of officiating the game. But every time they turn on the goddamn microphone, it's like, oh God, you're definitely the understudy for Professor Harold Hill.
They make it so much
Jesus
worse.
Jesus Christ. we have problems right here in the city by the river. Problems is a word that rhymes with shit.
It really doesn't seem that long ago that Larry Scott was like our Elon Musk.
Yeah, spoiler. This is how it's going to go for Elon Sue. So.
Yeah. Just tune into regular person news in about 5 years.
But I mean, I think what I was trying to get at is Larry Scott was our Elon Musk as we knew Elon Musk then. And they've both been on kind of, Larry Scott is still our Elon Musk, but for today's definition of our Elon Musk.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they are like, trying to turn Oregon State into a self-driving football program, so it's not going great.
That would really save a lot of
I was
going
to say he's weirdly expensive, and he's definitely bleeding somebody else's blood.
I love this, though. The Pac-12 officiating gave my favorite call of all time, which is glasses ref in a Cal-UVA game, who he forgets where he is, points the wrong way.
This is a fucking Cal-UVA game. Why did he know where he is?
He points the wrong way. When he signals, like he goes like first down and they turn him around. But in the middle of the call, he forgets what the call is. And somebody's like, and you hear in the back, one of the other judges, like I think the line judge is going, holding, holding. And it's like, bye. And then the other guy's like, 78.
I told you, he's like an understudy. Just line.
Disappointed.
But, yeah. But, like, but to be fair, if you were calling Cal UVA, nothing about that would say, oh, I should take this seriously. This has major implications, and if I fuck it up, there will be problems.
Listen, if you're watching a Cal game, it is pretty hard to tell where the line is.
Where I was going to say, like, Pac-12, where the officiating is always a game of whose line of scrimmage is it anyway?
Boo.
I like it.
Jason, please pick another thing.
Quick one. Steven Rinesmith, how problematic is CFB? Extremely.
Jesus. Very.
How next. High can you count?
Sandwich Sommelier at Red Dirt Sport is the handle. Why the hell is the 1-point safety still around? This is a very vestigial sport, is the short answer. We don't really get rid of things. You know, like see some coaching hires that happen every cycle. You know, the 1-point safety is on the books because who would get rid of such a weird thing?
It's also one of those things of all the things college football has to, at the end of every year, they're like, all right, well, what do we got to fix? 1-point safety is pretty far down the list. Granted, they fix other things that are far down the list to avoid, you know, the big ones and probably dealing with the last question. But
now, yeah, they'll get around to the 1-point safety when they're done, you know, tying labor law in impenetrable knots.
Just to go back, if you're listening to this and you don't, you go, 1-point safety, y'all are high. No, it's real.
We are high. It's real.
But that's a good example. Real. The 1-point safety in real. That bowl game works because Ron Cherry is the ref. If that's Pac-12 ref, everybody's like, you made that shit up. Go home. You're crazy, yeah. Old man.
Ron Cherry had the authority to handle the situation. Yeah. Spencer's breaking down the actual rule for us, folks. Let's get some learning.
Yeah, because Ron Cherry, by the way, began that rule the way you should begin all weird vestigial rules.
We have an unusual ruling.
We have an unusual ruling on the field.
It's like some wild shit your doctor says to you, and you're like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Is it cancer? No, but you'll be shocked at what it is.
That was Ron Cherry for y'all ain't going to believe this shit.
Yeah.
It's like when your x-ray tech goes, whoa.
Okay, so the 1-point safety is is done this way. If you are trying to run, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Fuck it up. He's gonna fuck it up.
No.
We have an unusual explanation.
Can you guys vamp while he Googles this to make sure he's not messing up?
No. I will not.
So Holly,
I will not
Star
mess
Trek
this up.
Is basically if like Model United Nations and community theater had a baby, and the baby wanted to wear velour tracksuits.
I feel like I like all those things.
Right. You wouldn't like Star Trek though. You should skip it.
Cool.
Okay.
This is so much shorter than Spencer's.
We'll start with the case study on this, okay?
Whoa.
Jesus.
The case study, the last
he's so out of his depth right now.
Oh no. I'm consulting. I'm reading along, making sure. With an expert who wrote this, named Jason Kirk.
It is pretty funny that he's wearing a Florida t-shirt talking about the fewest amount of points you can score at one time.
I hate you so much.
Why'd you just shout my name?
I assume he has Chris Barnstable Brown like in an earpiece right now telling him what to say.
Because I'm not going to get this wrong, because man, I could. Okay? So, 2013 Fiesta Bowl, Kansas State v. Oregon, okay? I'm reading this, by the way, and hopping along with Jason Kirk, college football expert who wrote this.
Kansas State v. Oregon sounds like an agricultural feud that got to the Supreme Court.
It does. Kansas State
which
won.
Which would have been way more
Kansas
exciting
State
than
totally
this actual
won.
Game.
Except for this.
Now the game was
soybeans should be allowed to vote.
So, Kansas State blocked an Oregon extra point, right? It's a one-point play.
Right.
And then attempted to run it back. The player who was attempting to run it back was not fast, nor wily, or smart, and he was eventually tackled in the end zone. All right?
Which end zone?
The end zone into which Oregon was kicking.
The kicking team.
Toward the one you are kicking toward.
Just trying to keep it visual.
The other team's end zone. So that resulted normally in 2 points, right? If somebody's tackled in the end zone. Incorrect. This is a conversion attempt. So if you're tackled in the other end zone on a conversion attempt, it is a 1 point play. And Ron Cherry hammered it with, "We have an unusual ruling." Like, he warned people, like, "Y'all, I'm about to do something you might not be comfortable with, but we're all going to get through it together." That
he said
is
it like
1 point safety.
We're going to play a new song.
I feel like he was couching in advance against the notion that everyone was going to think he was making this up.
He was, and he did a great job.
Yeah.
No, he did. He did. Like,
instead of saying like, "I swear I didn't fuck this up" after the fact, he leads with, "This is going to sound like I fucked this up, but I promise you in advance, dear listener, I did not.
This is some wild shit, and it's not my fault."
Yes, yeah, that.
No, that's it. That's basically it. That's a lot like if you have a patient die on the table, but not because of anything the doctor did,
right,
but because like a giant mythical condor swooped in through the window and took him away.
Well, to go back, it's how the military had to explain how Brent Spiner died in the events of Independence Day when they went to find his family. Be like, "Well, there was an accident.
We had an unusual ruling."
No, man, Brent everything. Spiner is still alive in the second Independence Day.
That's not canon. All
right.
Now, by the way, this rule is so rare. How many of them have ever happened?
Like 3?
Something like that. It's not many more than that.
If you don't have the answer to this, I swear to God.
2. The one in 2013 in Kansas State, Oregon, in the Fiesta Bowl. And the other one was in 2004 with Texas A&M and I believe what was the other team?
Has it ever happened in the NFL?
Oh, it's at Texas A&M, Texas. Now,
do you want the fun fact?
Yes.
It was the same announcer on both. I believe it was Todd Blackledge.
Brad Nessler. It was Nessler.
Brad Nessler. Okay.
Has it ever happened in the NFL?
I do not know. Also, it doesn't matter because the NFL would ban it the minute it happened.
Yeah, they can't handle unusual rulings.
1 point safety. That's going to alien.
I mean, it is. The rule exists in the NFL, right? It's just never happened.
That disrespects the troops. A one, it's like a middle finger sticking up. Can't have that.
Rashawn Golden says hello.
All right.
I have a question.
Great.
Ready to go?
If this is about Star Trek, I swear to Christ.
No. This is another one. This is we're going to vary it up. That was a very technical question. This is also a technical question, but in a different department. This is from Dennis Petey.
Hold on, Holly. I have a new thing I want you to say when people ask if you've watched Star Trek. Okay.
It doesn't actually come up a lot.
Just go with it here. Okay. Say, okay. Oh, the Scott Bakula show.
I know who Scott Bakula is, but what do I mean by that?
So you're technically right. There is a Scott Bakula Star Trek show, but it will make people crazy.
Ooh, okay.
Because that's like the bootleg Star Trek show, right?
I think so. I think it's the one that they were like, we got to make this or we lose the rights.
Who do we get? Get me Bakula.
Get me Bakula. Is he going to do his New Orleans accent? Probably.
So it's an erotic Star Trek show.
It actually is funny because all the other like Star Trek series have like big classical themes, right? Like, and like, you know, driving sci-fi kind of, you know, soundtracky music. And the Star Trek Enterprise show in their first season had this like Bob Seger, like, "It's been a long road and we're in space." like so much so that you're like, is Scott Bakula actually singing this right now?
And he was. In character. All right, ask your question.
I feel like anyone who is listening to this who is actually like a big time Star Wars fan is just like pulling their teeth out with their bare hands.
You called it Star Wars.
Did I say Star Wars?
Yeah.
That poor person that I was trying to empathize with.
You just antagonized. Jason, are you me tonight?
You called the Star Trek nerd Star Wars.
I didn't even mean to. So that poor person I was trying to reach out to with the force, that's a Star Trek term. That poor person, I just drove them further into their misery.
You're a wizard, Harry.
We should have done this last week to release it on Star Trek Day.
Harry Potter.
That was May the 1st, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, easily my favorite communist Star Wars character. This is one that this is slightly current, actually. I'm gonna go switch it up. This is from Spencer Willems.
It's your burner account.
Yeah, that's the superior Spencer. He's a Mizzou grad, so he's well trained.
But you're a Medill grad.
I'm a Medill grad, so we are at contretemps, are we not?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
At least he didn't do it in the British accent.
You didn't see the face he made.
Oh, it's been more than 15 minutes. I am free and clear to deploy that whenever I want. Shit.
I still want to hear Jason do any accent.
I'm going to wait.
I will read my next one in the first British accent that comes to mind.
Okay. No, here's the thing. Jason can't do any accent outside the state of Georgia. However, he can do every single Georgia accent by county. If you're like, Camden County, go.
I want to hear what those vowels look like when you put them in the microwave.
Y'all want to hear Butts County?
Yeah.
Yes. Portugal, technically a county in Georgia.
That's amazing.
It might be shit, man. We got so many counties. I swear to God, like once a year, I'm like, that's not real.
And yeah, no, there's a Tolliver and a Taliaferro.
All right, ask your question.
My question is from Spencer Willems. Why is Lee Corso still on game day? He'll be on there until he drops. That's the answer. He'll be on there until he cannot do the show anymore. And that is largely a matter of how much his coworkers, like, this is a very serious answer. From everything I know, Lee Corso will, in one form or another, you notice they've scaled back his role as he's capable of a little less with age and everything that comes with it. They'll keep him on there as long as they can and in whatever role they can. So he's going to be on there until he is incapable of doing a role there because everyone who works with him loves him that much.
And they have to because sentiment has not historically been a big, huge part of this network's decision-making process. So you know it has to be not only a large volume of affection, but one with many sources.
Yeah, it's not just one person keeping him on that show.
No, because I don't think any one person, no matter who it was, could keep anyone else on that show.
They'd also have to, if they took Corso off the show, they'd pretty much have to get rid of, at least for a while, the whole put the mascot's head on thing, right?
Yeah, no, they lose their
and that's their capper. If you don't do that,
they lose the climax of the show, right?
Yeah.
They lose So I mean, until he can't do that, they'll keep him on the show. That is the actual answer for why he is still on game day.
And by that we mean wear a hat. So,
but a big hat.
I mean, he can probably wear a hat for a long, long time.
Yeah.
All right. So we're good. John, Dad will never leave us.
John Cheadle at JChay123. Will Jimbo Fisher actually be good at A&M? So we're gonna circle all the way back.
He better be.
Jason said that 95% of college football fans are all the same. Jason is right. In one way, the applicable way here, it's that everybody has the same stupid expectations. All of us come into every season, especially if you root for a Power 5 team. If you root for a Group of 5 team, it's probably a little different. But let's just say we're just talking about Power 5s and maybe a couple year-to-year Group of 5s. All have the same expectations, if not this year, within the next 5. And that is that your team will make the college football playoff, play for a national championship, and hopefully win a national championship. Right? Is there any fan base that we can say with confidence that that is not the 5-year expectation for their program? That's it. That
no, it's
that
just
within
that
category.
Texas A&M, the layaway plan that they put those hopes on is just a little bit more expensive.
But that's where we're all at. So will Jimbo Fisher actually be good? It depends. If your expectation is play for a national championship and win it, chances are not great, and that's not because of Jimbo Fisher, and that's not because of A&M. It's because this is a huge fucking sport, and hardly anybody gets to play for it. If you compare it to any of the pro sports, if you compare it to the other major college sports, the ratio of teams vying for a national championship and teams that actually get the opportunity to play for one in the playoff structure it's crazy out of balance. Like, half the NBA makes the playoffs. Most of them aren't going to make it there. Almost 70 college basketball teams make the tournament. They know most of them aren't going to make even the Sweet 16, but they all have technically a mathematical chance to get there. Most college football teams, not going to happen. Some of those Penn State teams that may have had what we may look back and say, that was the greatest player, Saquon Barkley, in Penn State history. They may look back and say, Mike Gesicki, one of the greatest tight ends. You know, we can go down the list here. And we just may say they didn't get a chance to play for a national championship. That's just how the system works. Any other system of this, they would have had a chance to play, right?
And, you know, you can have a look at, pick a team, you know, look at blank. You can have, it takes so much more beyond having the best team playing at the top of their game. There are so many other things that happen to each team that are completely and totally the fuck out of your control every single season. It takes so much luck on top of so much preparation, on top of so much execution, all of it riding on the backs of a bunch of very young athletes. And there's a reason people say it's hard to go undefeated, and it's not coach speak. It's because so much of what has to bounce your way is never going to be in your control.
Yeah. Let me also put you in context here. Since 1999, how many double-digit win seasons has Texas A&M had under various management with multiple circumstances and two different conferences since 1999? How many double-digit win seasons have they had?
Kevin Sumlin had one.
That's it. That's it. Yeah, 2012, they had 11. That's it.
So your goal, you know, if your realistic goal in light of everything presented here is, if you're A&M, you're in a very hard division. You know, say you win 8 or 9 games a year, and every 5 years or so, you win a really big bowl. That's pretty good, right? You could probably stick around as a coach for a long time pulling off that kind of record. No,
nope,
you're fired.
Nope. Get your ass out. It's just impossible. And that's why we're all crazy, because this is the cycle we all go through. Every hire that's made, every rebuild that happens, it's all with that shiny, shimmering ring that we're all trying to grab. And it's just, the mathematics of it do not work out. Not even slightly. Sorry. So no, Jimbo Fisher's going to suck at A&M and you're going to regret hiring him.
I mean, the bet
he is going to remain the richest man in history named Jimbo.
But again, remember, he didn't take the job for the money. That's a thing that he actually said. God, he's a great liar. I'll say Jimbo Fisher, top notch liar.
You know who don't care about that record though? In the grand scheme of things, because the money's guaranteed, Jimbo Fisher.
I thought you were going to say Joe Gemmell.
Bank of America. Joe Gemmell doesn't care because he's dead and thrilled. Champion.
Yeah, that's it. Also, by the way, a little detail there. Texas A&M doesn't stand a chance unless Jimbo Fisher pretty much puts a fence around Houston. If he doesn't recruit well out of Houston, and they don't do what like the mythical, like A&M, it's always like, man, they got to get Houston. After that, you know, get a little bit and you're good. No one's ever done that.
I think they should try putting a fence around Tuscaloosa. Just see if you can like hem in Bama's bus, you know?
Damn it, we can't recruit.
If Bama never leaves campus, hey, that's a W right
we
there.
Even doing things
Jimbo.
The right way.
Hey, Jimbo's out there in a tree stand with a gun. You probably don't want to go down the road. Just saying.
Jimbo's too Nick fancy Saban. To get in a tree stand.
He didn't get out of the like ATV, right? He didn't get out of a little like bobcat.
Jimbo's got hired help to hire help to get in a tree stand. Like Jimbo's shooters.
All right, let's switch things. Let's switch pain directions. This is from Kevin Saber Jr. at Naive Berserk. Would Texas still have lost even if Colt didn't get hurt? I want to start with a fact that has nothing to do with anything. Do you know who did the national anthem at this national championship game?
Pitbull.
Incorrect.
We're talking 2011?
This is the 2010 game.
2010? Oh, man.
Played in the Rose Bowl.
In the Rose Bowl. I'm trying to remember because it's like I have it. Oh, God. No, go ahead.
It's a pairing. Josh Groban and Flea.
What the fuck?
Yep.
What in the hell?
Flea played trumpet, right?
I was going to say, Flea doing what?
I don't know.
It was Flea.
Weirdly playing a selection of Yo-Yo Ma.
It was Flea on trumpet. I remember this.
You were joking.
No. He's an accomplished trumpet player.
Also, they had Audra McDonald perform America the Beautiful beforehand, which, fucking assholes, let her sing the national anthem. Fuck Josh Groban.
Josh Groban has got jokes and is a Michigan man.
Ugh!
It means he can tell the jokes and then he'll explain them with diagrams afterwards. Love him. I have a question. It's Michael J. Altman.
We're not even going to answer it, you asshole.
No, you want to actually answer that one?
You presented an alternate reality in which the tide lose and Spencer just couldn't even comprehend it. Just move
exactly.
Right
no, I mean, I think that's the answer. What, you want us to say that they beat Alabama? Hell no.
How is that supposed to comfort you now?
No. No. No, you're not. No, it's not happening.
What happens if he says yes? Do you feel better?
Yeah.
St. Phelan's ball.
Either way, Josh Groban and Flea did the national anthem. And you didn't say
we would Mac that. Brown still be there with two titles?
God.
No.
Oh, God, you're going to have to spray a good amount of those balls.
I'm so glad you said that, Holly.
Well,
oh God.
I've learned how to spore, so.
Mac out here leaving.
That's the most upsetting thing.
Mac leaving a late game at BYU to catch a flight, but he's the coach. That would have still happened. That's still canon.
I got a brunch reservation.
I think everybody, I got to go. I think Dwayne Aquina has this locked up. He's a good coach. I don't think you win. That's how silly I find this question. Colt gets hurt in the next play. You're like, what if he doesn't get hurt in that play? He gets hurt on the next one.
Or something worse happens.
Yeah, or worse.
Like he plays for the Browns.
For his own good. I kind of like that answer. Like, that sort of resolved it nicely. He would have gotten hurt at some point.
Hey, Colt McCoy was already hurt going into that game. You think this is my favorite thing people do at the end of a season. They're like, well, he got hurt in that game. No, they're all hurt. By the time the season adds up, if somebody leaves a game, they're like, well, you know, he got injured. This is a game where Dennis Dixon played on a torn ACL and then tore it the next game. Right? He didn't actually tear it. Oregon's like beautiful quarterback who this game struck down because it takes the most beautiful players and mangles them with contact. Dennis Dixon tore his ACL at least the game before he ever got in. So people are like, man, Colt wasn't hurt. Colt was hurt going into that game.
Also, Colt McCoy was 36. I feel like we can talk about that now.
That's true. Case was the youngin' in the family. Case was only like 34. When he played at Texas.
All right. Sorry. You had another one you wanted to talk about.
I did. And I think it's a real simple one. This is like an X's and O's one you can explain over the radio. And who doesn't love that? X's and O's explained over a speaker.
Podcast is a visual medium.
This is from at Michael J. Altman, who's in Tuscaloosa. Roll Tide. How does the triple option work?
So, Holly, the other thing about Star Trek is that the suits that they wear, you inevitably are going to ask the question, like, how do you poop in that? Because they're kind of like wearing formal wetsuits the whole time.
Actually, my question was, it's a tracksuit, but it's not like a full zip or a quarter zip even?
It does. I mean, it's hard to tell. Maybe I think like some of here's the fucked up thing. If memory serves, what the men wear is sort of a separate pants top situation, but the women, okay, it's all like a big one thing, and it's like, yo, ladies got a space poop too.
Oh, rompers are in right now, though. We're used to that bullshit of having to strip to the waist in like public bathrooms.
Here's the other great thing about Star Trek. So they're in space, right? And you're like, oh my God, space.
Oh, wait, back up.
Space has everything. Do you know that half the fucking episodes take place on this bullshit called the holodeck, which is, again, community theater? They're just like, let's be Sherlock Holmes today. Motherfucker, you don't have real work to do? Sorry. Spencer, go ahead.
So.
He hasn't been Googling. He's just sitting here seething.
I'm just waiting.
You started this.
This is an easy explanation, okay? Because the triple option, no matter how you're doing it, right? You're basically trying to get two people right, on offense, one with the ball and one who could potentially get the ball on one guy. That's all you're doing. That's really all you're doing, right? You're basically starting with a middle run, usually, right? I can give it to this guy who's going to run right up the middle. And that means the guy in the middle has to pretend to tackle him, right? Or at least pay attention to him. And then if everybody blocks the person they're supposed to, right? With my five linemen and my four down defensive linemen, right? I should end up in a situation where if everyone blocks it, no matter what my formation is, I should end up with a two-on-one situation where I either keep the ball, fake it, and then try to keep, or I pitch. And if I pitch, it should be to a really fast guy who's going to get around the corner and score a touchdown. That's it. You're just trying to get people to make the right tackle and play the assignment that they are given.
So
that's
the triple option. The triple option is all of the home, the traps rather, that Kevin McAllister sets up in Home Alone. They're very much, they're precision based. They're based on you'll be here at a certain time and then this thing will happen and it will hit you right in the nuts and you'll burn your hand, et cetera, et cetera. And when it works, it's really fucking fun to watch because nobody, you know, people just aren't where they need to be. You get big plays out of it, and it's very, there's this imbalance that's fun to it in the same way that Kevin McAllister destroying the Wet Bandits is fun because it's like, hey, you're not even throwing the ball. You're making us look very stupid. The problem comes because lots of college football defenses can do the thing that the Wet Bandits didn't, which is just throw a Molotov cocktail into the house and burn it down with the child inside.
For once, how is your metaphor more elaborate than mine?
I don't know. I'm pretty tired.
That never happens, man.
I'm sorry.
I mean, you're right, but that never happens.
I bet Will Greer throws a hell of a Molotov cocktail.